The Cygnus Mystery, an engrossing look at the constellation Cygnus. This oldest known constellation represented in art appears everywhere in the world as a bird on a pole, variously shown as an eagle, pigeon, peacock, heron, goose, falcon, and in Europe and Asia Minor as a swan. All around the world, there was once a great reference to the constellation known to us as the Northern Cross. But why? In a moment, this mystery, the Cygnus Mystery, with Andrew Collins on Coast to Coast AM. Andrew Collins is a popular writer of history, archaeology, and science, and for more than 30 years, he has explored the relationship between various types of religious beliefs and the cosmos, examining the origins of human civilization, the development of technology, and the inspirations behind magic and religion. His discoveries have led to several thought-provoking books that challenge the way we think about the past, including The Ashes of Angels and Gateway to Atlantis, his new work, The Cygnus Mystery. He's the organizer also of the Questing Conference, Britain's premier event on alternative history, forbidden archaeology, one of my favorites, and ancient wisdom. He's our special guest tonight for the full Coast to Coast program, Andrew Collins, live from the United Kingdom. Andrew, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Yes, a lovely morning here on May Day.
Oh, that is. It's already May. How quickly time flies, Andrew.
It is indeed.
This is an amazing story of the constellation Cygnus, but if you would, for some of us who don't seem to follow all the constellations out there, tell us a little bit about Cygnus.
Well, Cygnus is probably the brightest, one of the brightest constellations of the northern sky. As mentioned earlier, it is also known as the Northern Cross because it has an appearance of the Calvary Cross of Christ. And indeed, since the 6th century, it has been accepted in Christian star law as representing the cross of the crucifixion or the cross of St. Helena, the mother of the Emperor Constantine who went to the Holy Land to actually find, you know, the cross of Christ. So it's a very, very important symbol for Christians all around the world. However, in my own interest began from the fact that everywhere from Cuzco in Peru to the Great Pyramid in Egypt, from the painted caves of southern France, some of the largest stone circles of Britain, and even the Hindu temples of India, all show that this constellation was very, very important in the ancient mindset from the beginning of human history. And the question is why? You know, was it purely astronomical? Was it because it was the brightest constellation in the sky, one of? Is it the fact that it's so prominently placed on the Milky Way, so you can actually easily find it? You know, or was there some other more profound reason? And that is the basic premise of the book itself, to understand why Cygnus was so important to the ancient mindset.
And hence the mystery. Tell us about the constellation. If one were looking into the heavens, Andrew, where could they find it?
Well, at this time of year, it's just beginning to rise in the early to mid-evening, and it's more obviously a summer constellation. So if you go out into the evening, you know, during the summer months, during the autumn months, and essentially look up to the, you know, the zenith of the sky right above you, you should see it there, very prominently displayed, you know, just a whole cross form. Right above you, basically, and it then gradually sets down into the northwest horizon. You can watch it do so through the night.
Of course, they call it the swan because it bears a resemblance to a wide-winged, long-necked type bird in flight. Greek mythology, of course, mentioned it quite a bit. They even tied Zeus into it, disguising himself as a swan to seduce Leda, who gave birth to Gemini and Helena Troy. This constellation was also called is called the Northern Cross. Is it because it's also shaped that way?
Exactly, it is indeed. But as you rightly said, it has also been seen as a bird universally around the world, in various forms. As I said, in Europe and Asia, it's a swan or a goose. In other parts of the world, for instance, in amongst Native American traditions, it is generally an eagle or a turkey vulture, something like this. It's a magpie in China. a crane also in Eastern Asia, and even a quail, a small gaming bird amongst the Arab peoples. And it's in this form, and it's a case of why has it become associated with the bird? It's shown as a bird in some of the earliest cave art in southeastern, southwestern France. And it has been in this form for at least 17,000 years. In fact, I can probably take it back even older than that. So why is it a bird? And the answer seems to be that it always reflects, or certainly originally always reflected, a bird generally connected with migrational patterns, one that would go to and from the north for its migrational purposes. For instance, in Europe and Asia, swans, migrational swans, will appear to fly towards the north in the month of February and March, and it will then return around November. Almost as if this is some kind of, sort of miracle that it just reappears in the sky. Or so the ancients would have seen this. And it seems to fly towards the direction of its constellation. And it's for this reason that the stars themselves would have become associated with a different bird, such as a swan or whatever. But it has much more of an importance than this. Because all around the world, Cygnus is associated with the idea of cosmic life and death, the idea that it is the source of the place that the bird involved created the universe, that it opened its mouth, made a honk or call, and this brought the universe into manifestation. But it's also associated with the whole process of death and the afterlife, for it's seen that the bird of Cygnus actually carries the soul north, beyond the north wind, towards the original concept of heaven, because there's no question that probably the oldest placement of heaven is in the vicinity of the Cygnus constellation in the north, and not in the east, as we would normally associate it within the Christian religion, for instance. The much older direction of heaven was the north.
Now, the constellation, of course, originally part of the 48 ancient, as I would call them, constellations, Andrew, but now we've got 88 modern ones, of course. Why this one? Why was this one so important in antiquity? Why did they seem to single this one out?
Well, this is the million-dollar question, really. As I said, is it something that is purely astronomical? Because it's prominently displayed, placed on the Milky Way, and this is the visible part of our own galaxy, which we can see almost edge on around us as almost like a sort of a carpet, a road or river of stars. And Cygnus is really prominently placed at a spot where the Milky Way is seen to break into two in an area known as the Great Rift. However, also around 17,000 years ago, its stars occupied the position of the northern celestial pole, the area around the what we know today as the pole star. So in other words, 17,000 years ago, its stars basically turned upon themselves. So if you could see this as a celestial bird or a cosmic bird, it would be seen to turn upon itself in the sky constantly, year in, year out, for hundreds and then thousands of years. And there's no question that this would have become extremely important, to the very earliest Paleolithic peoples that witnessed this in the sky. And therefore, it becomes natural that they may have seen Cygnus as the place of cosmic life and death, the place of the cosmic axis of life, the place of access into the sky world, into the original concept of heaven. However, what we find is that even after the stars, due to the process known as precession, that's the slow movement of the stars right across a very long cycle, even after the stars of Cygnus began to drift away from the position of the celestial pole, they were still revered. And in 2004, I visited the oldest stone temple anywhere in the world. It's in southeast Turkey, at a place called Göbekli Tepe. And here we have a veritable Stonehenge created 11 to 12,000 years ago. In fact, in many ways, it's even more fascinating than Stonehenge, which is not very far away from where I speak at the moment, because there are beautiful carvings of animals and birds and humans upon the stones of this oldest temple of the world. And it was whilst I was here that I actually first got into the Cygnus mystery, because I realized that the various different temple rooms there were all orientated towards the north. And I also looked at other similar temples from a similar age in the same area, and they too were all focused towards the north. And I began to realize that they were looking towards something important in the sky. And the only set of stars that seemed to be of any relevance to the northern horizon at that exact position were those of Cygnus. And this got me wondering why, you know, the ancient peoples, the very first Neolithic peoples who would go on, their descendants would go on to create civilization in the ancient world, in Sumeria, in Babylon, in Egypt, and in the Indus Valley, for instance, why they were so interested in this constellation. And was it the fact that even after Cygnus had given up its position as a pole, as pole star, that the people continued to revere it, even though there was a new pole star? Vega took over in 13,000 BC and held the post for around 2,000 years. And yet the people still continued to venerate Cygnus, as if that was far more important than the current pole star. And this really got me wondering exactly what was going on. And I began to investigate Cygnus all the way around the world. For instance, at the Great Pyramid itself,
right.
The three main pyramids at Giza are all aligned perfectly towards the setting of Cygnus, and they're actually shaped perfectly to match the appearance of the three principal stars of Cygnus in the night sky. And research that I've been doing, even since the publication of the Cygnus mystery, has shown that those who constructed the Great Pyramid and its neighbours were integrally interested in Cygnus. They were almost obsessed with it. And, you know, the Hindu temples of India seem to be orientated towards Cygnus. Those that are associated with Brahma, who is the creator god in the Hindu myth, he rode upon the swan goose, Hamsa, who was said to have created the universe by letting out this divine call. And so is it not strange then that Hamsa, the swan goose, in Vedic, ancient Vedic Indian mythology and astronomy, is associated with the constellation of Cygnus?
Well, Andrew, let me ask you this. So is it also possible that this connection with Cygnus might have been because the ancients thought, or maybe something happened, that we might have been visited from somebody from that system?
It is very possible, and this will obviously bring me on to the next stage of interest to do with Cygnus, because I was writing, the book itself, and I was trying to understand why Cygnus was so important to these people. And then I discovered something very, very important, and this was the fact that in the early 1980s, a various particle detector chambers deep underground, we're talking about half a mile underground, at various places in the world, began detecting this completely unknown subatomic particle. And they continued to register these strange excesses of particles coming in, which they were clear that they actually were cosmic rays incoming from some point in the night sky. And because they had a regularity, a cycle of exactly 4.79 hours, they could, their place of origin could easily be detected. And this was a source in the constellation of Cygnus, a binary star thought to be either a neutron star or a black hole, known as Cygnus X3. And it would seem that this source, around 37,000 light years away from here, which might sound a long way.
Well, we just found that planet that's 20 light years away.
That's correct, yes. And although that's in Libra, I must point out,
yep.
But is that, there was this incredible source out there that was bombarding the Earth with cosmic rays. And these weren't just normal cosmic rays, because most cosmic rays are caught in the upper atmosphere and don't really even reach the surface of the planet. But these ones were so powerful that they were penetrating down at least half a mile to be registered within these particle decay detectors, which were deliberately placed so deep so that they would be exempt from any kind of cosmic rays, because they would obviously interrupt the subtle experiments that were going on, deep down in these places, usually mines or within mountains, things like this. So strange were these particles, these unique particles, that they were actually given their own name. They became known as cygnets, meaning children of the swan. This was a very beautiful name that they were given in the mid-1980s. And many scientific papers were written on this subject at this time, but so strange were the reports that a lot of particle physicists began almost to doubt that this was actually happening, although it is a fact.
Is it still happening, Andrew?
It is still happening now, and what is more, over the last 5 years, it has now been accepted by scientists that there is a huge excess of cosmic rays coming from one particular source in the sky, and it is basically Cygnus X3 and the vicinity around it. And so strange is this that scientists, and this is only within the last 2 months, there are new reports out trying to create new mechanisms to try and explain why these cosmic rays are coming from this direction. But what's so important here is, firstly, how these cosmic rays may have affected us in the past, bearing in mind that they could penetrate so deep down underground to the very places where our Paleolithic ancestors 17,000 years ago in Europe were creating these incredible murals that showed the constellation of Cygnus. Was something going on in their minds? Were they somehow being affected by these cosmic rays? And, were they in some way becoming aware of the fact that changes were beginning to go on within them that were somehow associated with this group of stars in the sky? Was this the reason why they did not disregard Cygnus when when it was no longer at the position of the celestial pole and other stars took over that role? Or was it the case that they were changing, they were evolving inside? And this is the next stage of our conversation.
All right, Andrew, stay with us. I'm going to talk more with you about the Cygnus mystery. We're going to take phone calls next hour with Andrew as well, because this is just an incredible story right here on Coast to Coast AM. I just love these space mysteries. I really do. Hey, May 18th is the last day where we're giving you the double CDs, the classic Father Malachi Martin interviews. When you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter or when you renew, call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online, coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Andrew Collins. We're talking about the Cygnus mystery, ancient secrets of the cosmos. How do the ancients understand the cosmos? I've always been baffled by that, Andrew.
Well, I think that we're looking at the fact that they would have seen themselves, or not so much themselves, but their ancestors as originally having come from the stars. I mean, all around the world, still today, there are various indigenous cultures that believe this. Even the Incas, you know, the peoples of the Andes, believed wholly that their, you know, their ancestors came from the stars, came down the Milky Way, and were here, obviously, within physical form, within their own life, and would return along the Milky Way to their concept of heaven. They would actually enter the Milky Way at the time of the solstices, which would almost form like access points or gateways that would allow this journey on to the place of heaven. And, yeah, the Incan peoples, even though, you know, Peru, for instance, is south of the equator, and therefore you would think that their main interest would be in the southern skies. No, it was actually in the northern skies. And only recently, an Italian scientist has realized that one of the most important symbols of the Incas, which was the puma, of which Cuzco, the very center of the Incan kingdom, is actually shaped to form like this puma on the ground, that its celestial counterparts, the point of cosmic access, is actually the very dark area where Cygnus is placed upon the Milky Way. It creates what they call a dark star constellation. In other words, it's formed out of the darkness that you can see within the actual Milky Way itself. And this puma corresponds exactly to the position of where the Cygnus stars are. So in other words, you know, here is a good example of ancient people seeing Cygnus as the source of life, and the fact that they would return there even in death. And this is to a people who existed south of the equator, who, as I said, should in theory have been interested in the south. But you say how they would relate it to the cosmos. Obviously, this is one way. But another is the fact that they would actually have traveled deep underground to commune with, you know, the cosmic spirit, what they would have seen as the source of all life. And this was where they painted their paintings, which were deep, deep underground. As I said, some of these paintings are half a mile underground, a mile underground, or even further.
But and was there a reason why they did that then? Because of its their connection with the underground, with that dark side?
This is exactly it. I mean, I don't know if any of your listeners realize that we can actually see cosmic rays. Back in the 1960s with the Apollo program, the astronauts found that it was difficult for them to go to sleep because they kept seeing flashes of light in their eyes, either whether their eyes were open or closed. They reported this to NASA, who did subsequent experiments with later flights, and they conclusively discovered that these were being caused by cosmic rays passing through the liquid part of the eye and discharging and creating something known as Cherenkov radiation, which is essentially a burst of light. And this can be seen objectively through the eye. Now, if you can imagine our Paleolithic ancestors deep down in their caves, in the total darkness, achieving these trance states, these shamanic states, possibly through hallucinogens or through other processes.
That ayahuasca and things like that.
Exactly. And then very suddenly, you know, they see a burst of light. To them, this will be a trigger for some kind of religious or mystical experience, which itself might allow some kind of download of information, which might, you know, be from within themselves, or it may be that they're attuning to you know, some higher consciousness or something like this, but that somehow they would associate, you know, their origins, their cosmic origins, with this manifestation of light. Now, if we can remember that Cygnus X3, which I must point out, is almost like some unimaginable cosmic gun barrel in the sky. It produces these incredible jets of subatomic particles in the form of gaseous plasma. And one of its jets along its axis is pointing directly at the Earth. And this is unique. And astronomers call such phenomena or such a source a blazar or a microblazar. And this is a quite unique term. And there is only one known microblazar in the whole of the galaxy, and that is Cygnus X3. But anyway, getting back to our guys in the cave, they would have realized that these lights which they would have seen and associated with religious experience, would have grown and declined in accordance with the rising and the setting of the stars. And therefore, it is likely that over generations, they would have realized that the most prominent source in the sky that was above when these experiences were taking place down below was that of Cygnus.
Now, let me ask you, Andrew, do you think that this experience was more cosmic or more intervention by possible extraterrestrials that might have been coming from this constellation area?
Well, initially, we're talking about something that is purely scientific here, purely cosmic.
All right.
Something which is affecting us. Back in 1973, Carl Sagan, the great astronomer and science writer, said that he felt that human evolution was being affected by some kind of neutron star in deep space, and that this caused advances or jumps in human evolution. Now, that was a quite bold statement back then, and he repeated it subsequently.
Sure.
It is now scientific fact that amongst the various processes that can cause sudden changes in human DNA that will lead to alterations in human evolution is cosmic rays. You know, other sources for changes would be everything from diet to environmental conditions to chemical changes within the body to other sort of aberrations. But cosmic rays may well be one of the most important things that causes sudden leaps and jumps in human evolution. And I am certain that the ancients were very much aware of this, or certainly they were aware that the cosmos affected them. And I am also certain that they looked particularly towards one area of sky, you know, as being responsible for this. And that was Cygnus, which they saw as the source of cosmic life and death, the place where life came from and the place where life would return in death. And, of course, the thing is that the idea that we actually come from the cosmos is now also something which is possibly scientifically viable, because it's considered that the original DNA of life, which obviously enables replication and evolution to cause all the human, the animal species, the life on Earth, you know, in all, could well have actually hitched a ride upon a meteorite, an asteroid or comet, which came here billions of years ago.
What if Cygnus was not around, did not exist? Paint me a picture.
Well, the one thing that we know about Cygnus X3 is that it has been in exactly the same phase for at least 700,000 years. So in other words, what the scientists were experiencing in the 1980s and have subsequently done so to the present day could easily have been going on for at least 700,000 years.
Not a long time in space-time, is it?
No, but it corresponds very well with the modern human being, basically. You know, modern humans evolved in Africa probably between 500 and 700,000 years ago, with our own, you know, human species really coming out of Africa around 200,000 years ago, obviously reaching Europe around 40,000 years ago.
Why, though, Andrew, is this constellation so unusual than others? I mean, don't they all function the same way?
No, they don't. I mean, the thing is that we live in the a galaxy that we call the Milky Way. And what happens within the Milky Way, essentially, is going to be that which affects us, you know, down on Earth. And Cygnus X-3 is the only blazar. It's the only object in our galaxy so far known that has a huge, you know, jet or beam that's actually pointing in the direction of the Earth, like, you know, as I say, some kind of cosmic gun barrel shooting or pouring cosmic rays in the general direction of the Earth.
Amazing.
In a manner which scientists can register and are registering now and are totally baffled over.
All right, the fact that the cosmic rays are still hitting us, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I mean, you know, mutations occur. And what we know is that there have been various times in the past where cosmic rays have been at an all-time high, you know, much higher levels than today. For instance, the ice cores that are taken from places like Antarctica and the Arctic region, Greenland, for instance, record different levels of isotopes that are produced by cosmic rays that hit the atmosphere and break up. Obviously, some continue towards the ground. Obviously, some, as we have said, go even deeper down into the Earth. However, they create these isotopes as a byproduct, the most obvious of which is something called beryllium-10. And the different levels of beryllium-10 are recorded within the ice and can be measured. And they show that, for instance, there was an extremely high level of cosmic rays hitting the Earth between about 35 and 40,000 years ago. Another lot around 17,000 to 14,000 years ago, and possibly other smaller cycles. But what we know is that at these times in human history were the times of great evolution. 35 to 40,000 years ago is when essentially human beings turned up in Europe, started to create extraordinary cave paintings, adopted a new type of life where they began to understand the concept of the afterlife, of burial of the dead, of creating idols, creating representations of different parts of their life, religious, mystical, etc., etc. And then back in 17,000, 14,000 years ago, there was another huge flurry of activity deep underground, a whole new phase of deep cave paintings that were taken on to a whole new level. And this activity paved the way for the foundations of the change of lifestyle from the hunter-gatherer to the settled Neolithic farmer around 12,000 years ago, as exampled by this oldest temple of the world, which I talked about, at Göbekli Tepe in southeast Turkey. That's now suspected to be as old as 12,000 years ago. I mean, that's quite incredible. I mean, that's you know, something like 8,000 or 9,000 years earlier than Stonehenge or the Great Pyramid.
All right, let me ask you this. The fact that then these ancients had this incredible interest in the constellation Cygnus, why aren't modern astronomers and physicists as excited as the ancients were then?
Well, they are. This is what's so extraordinary. You know, I can point you towards scientific papers that have come out in the last month that that are attempting to try and understand why there is a huge excess of cosmic rays coming from the Cygnus region. They are trying to even create, say, new mechanisms to try and understand what is going on here. But As I said, the idea of changes in evolution, goes on all the time, and many of them can be detrimental to the body. You know, just like exposure to industrial radiation, something like Chernobyl or whatever, you know, it can be very damaging to the body, will create mutations, and that will die out. But it's a case of survival of the fittest again, that certain mutations are good for advances within the body, and can create alterations which can take the body onto a new phase, or the mind, because obviously this is not just a physical thing, this is a mental thing as well, and that it can change and alter, you know, the perception, intellect, you know, interaction, creativity, things like this. And that seems to be one of the byproducts of very subtle forms of changes in evolution. Human DNA.
Did the Mayans know about this constellation?
Yes, they did. Yes, they were very, very interested in Cygnus. They saw it initially in terms of a bird known as Seven Macaw, as mentioned within the religious text known as the Papal Vu. And this was seen to sit at the top of the cosmic tree. And that cosmic tree is a representation of the Milky Way. And it can be shown that the bird that sat on the top of the tree, you know, was a representation of the Cygnus constellation. But more than this, it was represented very strongly within their star clock, their yearly star clock, as it had been previously with the Olmec civilization of Central America. They too saw it as extremely important, as an essential part of regulating their life.
It is absolutely an incredible piece of work. How did you come across all this, Andrew?
Well, as mentioned earlier, it really began back in 2004 when I visited Göbekli Tepe, the oldest stone temple in the world, which is where the book, The Cygnus Mystery, actually starts. I mean, trying to understand the mindset of people that lived 12,000 years ago and created something that was possibly even more extraordinary than Stonehenge was something that I just had to do. And at the time I was out there, I was just so baffled by it. And when I came back, you know, I just could not get the idea out of my head. I had to try and understand the mindset of these people. What were they doing? Why did they orientate these temples towards the north? And eventually, obviously, Cygnus became an answer. But I think that what is interesting here, and maybe we should talk about another subject of great interest, which I know is there on the questions that I've put down to you, and that is the subject of the Watchers and the Nephilim. For those listeners that are not aware of it, the Watchers are the wisdom bringers of the ancient Hebraic text known as the Book of Enoch and other similar material, and the Nephilim.
Well, let's do this, Andrew. Yeah. We're coming up to the top of the hour, so when we come back, we will talk about the Nephilim, which is exactly on my mind here. And then we'll also open up the phone lines, and we'll let a lot of our astronomer experts chat with you as well. The Cygnus Mystery. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with Andrew Collins.